And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. It is Thursday, the 11th of July, 2024, and we're just at 5 minutes past nine. How are you all keeping out there? It is the 9 to noon show, of course, for the next 3 hours. Plenty to keep you informed and entertained. We want you on board for the whole three. Get involved in the conversation. As I say, we've lots lined up, but always open to what you want to talk about as well. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. You can voice note WhatsApp there as well, or give us a call on 07491 25,000, and emails come into us at comments@highlandradio.com. feel free, if it suits you, to watch the show on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. Go to YouTube, put in Highland Radio Ireland, and we're on Facebook and the X platform as well. And of course, you can always stream in browser on our website. I don't mention that too much, do I? Highlandradio.com. Thursday's always a busy morning for papers, so let's have a look. Olwyn Elwright, this is the front of the Draconal Tribune, has been appointed Fine Gael Director of Organisation by the Taoiseach, and the decision gives a new urgency to Fine Gael's plans for an early election. The party has also confirmed that September 22nd is the final deadline for their selection conventions in the 43 constituencies. Enright, who was a TD for 9 years, will hold one of the most powerful posts in Fine Gael headquarters structures, and the responsibilities will include election planning and campaign strategy. She'll have control of driving the organisation as they prepare to ramp up their general election campaign. She'll also be responsible for candidate strategy, and among her first challenges will be to field two strong people in a bid to retain her husband Joe McHugh's seat. He's among, of course, 17 Fine Gael deputies not contesting the general election in the autumn. On to the Donegal News this morning, gearing up for a general election. There's a buzz going, isn't there? Inspirational Milford woman Nikki Bradley was yesterday appointed to Seanad Éireann by Taoiseach Simon Harris, and is expected to now stand for Fine Gael in the forthcoming general election in the hope of holding the seat being vacated by former Minister Joe McHugh. Now, I mean, it's great fun speculating. I'd be really, really surprised if she chose that route. I mean, it's a great start in politics to be appointed to the Seanad. She probably wants to sort of find her feet in there, get a sense of what's going on, push what she believes is important to her and the constituents. I'd be surprised. But anyway, we're going to speak to Nikki Bradley on the show tomorrow, I think. But as I say, I would just be really surprised. I would think she'd be better off not doing it, to be honest with you. It's a great appointment to get to the Seanad, a great honour. You can do stuff in there. Do 4 years in there, 3 or 4 years in there, and see what the story is then. But anyway, she'll make her own mind up, and maybe she has already. We'll find out tomorrow. With an October general election hotly tipped by one in the know, political source, poll-topping Letterkenny Fianna Fáil councillor Donald Mandy Kelly, he's thrown his hat into the ring, hoping to be selected by his party to stand. That's going to be tight for him as well, too, because he's really effectively in Charlie McConnellogue's territory, so to speak. Do you know the way the counties split up? Charlie McConnellogue is running again for election, and Donald Mandy Kelly is kind of in his backyard. It wouldn't make great sense, I don't think, anyway. I don't know, by the way. I'm just saying, from watching politics doing this show, I can't see how it would benefit him. And also, the way the voting structure is done within Fine Gael, I'm not sure, and because he's kind of effectively in the Charlie McConnellogue area, I'm not sure really how he would travel with the other areas that would be voting in terms of profile and what have you. Obviously, a very good councillor, did incredibly well in the local elections, but I think they're going to go north and south. That would make an awful lot more sense. Charlie McConnellogue in the north of the county, Micheál Nochtain in the south of the county, and an outsider. I don't know what Pat the Cope Gallagher's plans are. Is he going to throw his hat into the ring? I would imagine if Fianna Fáil went to Pat the Cope Gallagher, and as I say, I have no insight, and said, look, there's a gap in the south of the county, we'd love you to come back, that he might be inclined to do it for the party. Would he go ahead and sort of contest a nomination against Micheál Nochtain in that area? I'm not quite so sure. Personally, I would think, I imagine Micheál Nochtain and Charlie McConnellogue, if I was a betting person. And from a Fine Gael perspective, a John McNulty or a character like that, as I say, I just don't think Nikki Bradley will go for it at this stage, but we'll see tomorrow. We're also speaking to Simon Harris on the show tomorrow as well, by the way, so I'll be very keen to put to him to get his reaction to... Now, obviously, listen, when a politician makes themselves available. I'm sure there's an awful lot he wants to talk about in terms of, you know, Fine Gael's policies for the future. You probably want to welcome Nicky Bradley into the Shannon, but I also do want an opportunity to ask him what he thinks of the Attorney General's advice and what impact it may have had on the formation of the defective concrete block scheme. But obviously have to afford him an opportunity as well to talk of the positive things that he and his party are doing as well. Last week, Deputy McHugh's wife, Olwyn, a former TD, was appointed by Simon Harris to take control of the party's general election campaign. Okay, thanks. Not thanks. There you go. That's that. Derry News. Stick to your promise. The family of a Derry man killed during the Troubles has called on the new government to repeal the Legacy Act. The controversial act introduced by the Conservative government shut down all historical inquests and has prevented new civil cases from being lodged in court. The act also offered conditional immunity to suspects of Troubled-related crimes. I'm a bit dry. I'm going to take a very brief sip of coffee here. My mouth's quite dry this morning. My apologies. A horrendous story coming out of Britain. I'm sure you've come across it on the Rolling News or wherever else you may get your news. A police manhunt that crisscrossed North London in the wake of the savage murders of a mother and two daughters came to a dramatic end last night when armed police swooped on a cemetery where they captured the injured suspect. It concluded a day of horror in the market town of Bushey, Berefordshire, in which 63-year-old Carol Hunt and her daughters Hannah, 28, and Louise, 25, were found with severe injuries believed to have been inflicted with a crossbow and later pronounced dead at their home. They were revealed to be the wife and daughters of the BBC Five Live racing commentator John Hunt, who was not at home when the devastating scenes took place and the horrors they must have faced in the just in those moments. And John Hunt, too, would be a very familiar voice to anyone who listens on the radio to horse racing. You would know his voice if you heard it, if you were inclined to listen to horse racing. The horror unfolded overnight in the prosperous neighbourhood with its carefully kept homes and neatly trimmed gardens. Mr Hunt, returning from work on Tuesday evening, raised the alarm after finding his wife and daughters with severe injuries. And despite the efforts of paramedics, they were pronounced dead shortly after 7 p.m. Police quickly identified their suspect as Kyle Clifford, 26, a former soldier who Herefordshire police said was known to the victims. As I say, just how would you cope with that? I mean, it's just unimaginable. Good news for those planning flights. Aer Lingus pilots halted industrial action at the airline as their union leaders backed a 17.75% pay rise offer late last night. But some passengers will face cancelled flights into early next week. It should be few and far between, though. Irish Airline Pilots Association, IALPA, officials agreed to recommend that Aer Lingus members vote for the Labour Court brokered deal to boost pay by 17.75% and to immediately lift a work to rule that has upended the travel plans of almost 86,000 passengers. So if you're planning your holiday, you were planning your holiday, and it was with Aer Lingus, the flights, that is, hopefully now that is some good news, because you have to work really, really hard often to get the money together for such a break. So hopefully, as I say, that doesn't that works out for a lot of people. The Irish Daily Mail says that more than three quarters of people do not have confidence in the courts to deal with cases of violence against women. In the wake of the handling of the case of assault victim Natasha O'Brien, an Amarach poll for the Irish Daily Mail found that a lack of confidence is highest amongst women, with 82% of women stating they do not have faith in the system compared to 70% of men. In a damning indictment of the current state of the criminal justice system, just 13% felt they have confidence in the courts In the courts to page 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. All right, to appropriately deal with violence against women. Ms O'Brien was violently assaulted by soldier Cahill Crotty, 22, in an unprovoked attack on O'Connell Street in Limerick City in 2022. He received a fully suspended 3-year jail sentence last month after entering a guilty plea, which sparked outrage and led to protests nationwide. And also, too, yesterday, and there's case after case after case of this, there was a person, a male, who was found with... And obviously conscious that there could be younger people listening, so you'll understand what I'm saying. 30,000 images on his computer. 30,000. Now, what kind of an individual is this to have one, let alone 30,000? And he received a fully suspended sentence. To do what? To just go out into society and change? I don't know. But anyway, it's not just in the case of women. It's dealing with that awful crime. There seems to be a serious issue there. The Irish the Irish Farmers Journal. There's anger among weanling producers as some farmers with autumn calves have been excluded from the new 50 euro head beef welfare scheme. Only calves born between the 1st of July 23 and 30th of June 24 will be eligible for the scheme, which is to open in August. However, a good weanling trade and tight grass supplies this year have resulted in many of last year's autumn born weanlings being sold already. Now, a survey, another survey, this from the Central Statistics Office. This is about trust in various groups and individuals, I suppose, in Irish society. And you, the Irish people, trust each other. You trust the courts, which seems to contradict that other survey, and you trust the Gardaí, but you do not trust politicians. This is a new survey from the Central Statistics Office. Trust in other people's at 83%, which is nice, at 70% in Gardaí and 69% in the courts, but stands at just 26% for political parties, so only a quarter of you trust political parties. The data is based on the responses of 2,000 people, bar the shouting, who took part in the CSO's trust survey. Some 83% reported that they trusted most people. This was the highest level of trust when compared with other categories such as government, organisations or the news media. Let's see how many of you trust the news media. Well, it's probably buried. I suppose it's in a newspaper, so I'll find that anyway. Right here. Close to half of you, 47%, reported that you trusted the news media. Oh, come on. Only half of you trust me. Please. 70% of you express trust in the guards, which is good. So half of you don't trust me? Well, you don't trust the media more generally speaking. But anyway, I wasn't surprised at that either, by the way, in the current climate. There's been a resolution to the situation of that lady, an Irish air hostess held in Dubai. The mother of an Irish woman held in Dubai on charges of attempted suicide and alcohol consumption says she won't be fully happy until her flight home is in the air. Speaking to the paper, Tori Towie's aunt, Anne Flynn, also revealed the family is planning a homecoming party for the young Roscommon woman, though I don't know, with everything she's been gone through, because he saw the images of the abuse she was allegedly the victim of. I'm not sure she'd want a party, but anyway. After a travel ban, the party will happen after a travel ban was lifted and cruel charges against her niece dropped. Anne also said she hoped 28-year-old Tori would be back in Ireland within the next two or so days. And finally, Ireland has a new soccer manager for the men. Ireland's new football boss is a dentist who keeps himself busy in his spare time by filling cavities just in case he ever gets the sack. Icelander Helmer Hallgrímsson, who recently parted ways with the Jamaican national team, pulls teeth for fun while other gaffers are off on the course playing golf. I mean, he's had a modest enough football career, I think. One of the things he did achieve was he was managing Iceland when they knocked England out of the Euros, was it? But other than that, I don't know. What about John O'Shea? Should John O'Shea have been given a crack of a fair crack at it there, do you think? Or maybe put someone in with John O'Shea? No harm to this guy. I don't really know who he is. As I say, I know he managed Iceland and Jamaica, and he's got that famous victory over England. But other than that, I don't know. Anyway, that's a run through the papers for you. We're joined on the programme now by Rebecca McDade, who's a member of the AIM2 party, but I suppose it's not in an AIM2 context we're talking now. Rebecca really is such. It's as a road user. And you've been pain through the teeth, it might feel like, for just using roads around the country. What's your point, Rebecca?
Hi, Greg. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, I had to go to Dublin on Tuesday. And I went through the normal toll, which is now 2.30. It used to be 1.90 last time I had been up, so I didn't even realise it had gone up that little bit extra. But then I had to use a tunnel because of the direction I was going in that day.
Mm-hmm.
And the tunnel, because of the time, it was 9:30 in the morning. They call it peak time, so it cost me 12.50. But whenever you come out of the tunnel, there's another toll again that you have to pay in order to get through to get into the city. So that cost another 2.30 there. then whenever I was coming home, you know, obviously, actually on the way as well, because I was on that, the other, I think it's the M50 it's still called, you know, your overhead toll.
Mm-hmm.
So the overhead toll is another three, that has been up now to 370.
Yes.
And I had to pass that twice. So I had to pass that on the way and coming back. So all in all, it cost me 26.80.
My word.
Just in tolls alone.
And the question is, I suppose, what's the benefit for you in this other than being able to use these roads?
Well, it's just the fact that, you know, you come through the toll and they have different time zones when you go through the toll. So it's, you know, when they call it peak times, it costs a person more to drive at that time than maybe it would be at either earlier in the morning or later in the evening,
mm-hmm.
which I just think is a rip-off. But the other thing I would also say is, if we were benefiting from the money that the tolls from that comes from the tolls, that's one thing. But it's my belief that this is all privatised.
Mm-hmm.
So then we don't actually benefit from the money that's paid, because the money's not being spread out throughout the country.
Yeah, I get you.
I would have a serious issue with that.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure the split between, you know, it's public-private. I'm not really sure the split between Transport Infrastructure Ireland and the private, you know, the private entities that are involved in the tolling, but it'd be well worth looking at, I think.
It would be good to find out the information on that and how much money would come through, you know, and be spread out around the country for that, for the money that they're taking in, because that is a serious amount of money going through there every day. And on certain tolls, you have to have the right money also. You can't actually, you can't get change. So unless you pull up to a booth where there's somebody manning the booth, then you will get your change. But if you don't have the right change, then they get the rest of the money as well.
Mm.
So you won't get your change back. So, like, it's just, and it's really expensive. So there probably is maybe a better idea for people living in around there, that they may have weekly tolls or where they pay, and it doesn't matter how many times it goes through it. But even at that, it's so much. It's such a lot of money, you know. And it was a lot for me going up for the one day. And coming back again, then there was an accident on the motorway on the M1, is it, coming back again?
Mm-hmm.
And there was a massive delay there. So it's just, you're sitting in for hours. So in Donegal here, we have a bit of traffic maybe in around Letterkenny, but it's nothing like what it's like up there. So it's, but my main issue is the cost of everything. So as I said, the last time I'd been there, it was $190. I don't remember it being up since that, and now it's $230.
Right,
so,
well, you,
it's an extra cost again on top.
You mentioned the M50 Dublin Tunnel, so we'll run through who owns that and where the money goes. M50 Concessions Limited is responsible for the operation and maintenance of the M50, and it receives what it calls availability payments for this service from TII. So in 2021, the last figures I had, M50 Concessions recorded a profit of $2.4 million. And the company is owned by a Netherlands company, effectively. So the toll income from the N50 goes to the TII, that's Transport Infrastructure Ireland. And it's
Ireland, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Which is responsible for our roads as well. In its annual report for 21, the state agency recorded total toll income of 160 million, with 140 coming from the M50 and 13.7 coming from the Dublin Tunnel, 4 million from tolls collected at the M4 Plaza at Kilcock Kinnegad. So the majority of that money does go into the TII, which is responsible for our main roads up here, Rebecca. So you could argue that money, you're doing your county people a favour, but then we could sort of get down to the nitty-gritty, and is enough of that money actually spent in Donegal?
Well, I would love to know that. That would be a great statistic to find that out.
Yeah, the TII, allocates something like 200, is it 25 million annually to roads in Donegal, something along those lines? It's normally around about 25, and then there's a supplementary announcement. I do take your point more broadly, and there is a lot of money going to private pension pots, do you know what I mean, that invest in businesses like this. It's the same as, I suppose you could say, to some extent, it's a little bit like hospital car parking charges, isn't it? That's another area that's privatised, but there is some benefit to the state.
Yeah, and it's just to make the people aware that if they are travelling to Dublin, and especially for the tunnel, to check out the times, because it's something that I never thought on doing, because at the time I thought, I'll probably be all right to go the other side and then through the city. But when I realised where I was, the toll, you know, the tunnel was going to be the best route.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just carried on in that direction, but didn't realise what the cost was going to be. So yeah. Just for everybody listening, just plan out your route. Make sure that you know what times you're going to be going through, because it's going to cost you if you don't.
Yeah, and
you
also
know, and have
to,
your change ready for your toll.
Aye, that's what I was going to say.
Have your change ready so that you know. So again, it's 2:30 for those main toll bridges there.
Mm-hmm. And you can't tap with your phone, which I think is quite strange. You can't tap with your phone for the toll.
I think it's the toll tunnel is the one that I tapped with my card.
Yeah, but the phone, you can't tap. You can with the card, but not with the phone, because I got stuck with that, because I have a card that doesn't tap, you see.
I don't have it in my phone. Yeah. Too easy to use that one, Greg. At least if you don't have the card with you, that's it.
I know what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying. All right. Listen, Rebecca, good to get the info out there.
Okay.
And it's actually quite interesting in that, you know, like regardless of where the money goes or regardless of how it's spent, and that's not in any way to disregard what you've said, for a journey to and around Dublin, and depending on the way you had to go, you faced an additional £26.80 on your petrol or diesel, or electric for that matter, on your road tax, on your insurance, on the VAT and tax you paid on your car. It's an extra £26.80. Do you know what I mean? Almost regardless of where it goes, which is actually kind of interesting, I think.
Yeah, and you know what? I wouldn't have a problem paying the toll for the tunnel if it had been... Because I know that you can pay, say, £3.50 for that tunnel at a certain time.
Right.
And I only know that because somebody had been, a relation of mine had gone up to the Donegal match there when they were playing last. So it only cost them £3.50 because of the time that they went.
Okay.
So that's why I never thought anything more of it, to be honest. I thought it'll probably be another £3.50, which that's fine. But then you pay your £12.50 going through the tunnel, and as soon as you come out of the tunnel, and you have to turn left again to where I was going. So then I had to sit and pay another £2.30 again just to get through there to get on my journey. So the £12.50 would have been more than enough.
You were chucking change out of the window
without
like
paying another. Without paying another £2.30 on top of it. So it just kind of gaunted me, and I thought, oh my God, when is it going to be going home? And then I forgot about the overhead one. So I had the two of those to pay them whenever I got home.
No. Okay. Well, at least your ashtray is empty now, anyway, with all the change or whatever they call the. There's no ashtrays now, but you know what I mean? The little.
Well,
place
it was
we
a good thing that I had change.
Yeah.
I had change in the purse. I took it from the press yesterday evening, and do you know how I got that money, Greg? Was taking the bottles back to the recycling bank and it gave me the money. That's where that money came from, and that's what paid for those couple of tolls there.
Okay.
The few tolls that I had. That's where the change come from, because I wouldn't have had the money for the £12.50 if I had to do that.
Lovely stuff. All right, Rebecca, it's a good advice, because actually there are people probably heading down to Dublin for the first time in a while this weekend for the semi-final and whatever else might be on. Thank you so much. That's Rebecca McDade there, who you'll know is ran for AIM2 in the local elections, but that's just by the by. Hi, Greg. We spoke to a listener yesterday. Someone texted in, and I kind of rant a wee bit about shopping around for your car insurance, and it was, I think her name was Mary. She shopped around because she got a quote for insurance. Shopped around, saved €300 on her old premium. Hi, Greg. I shopped around for my car insurance, saved €200 by changing. I was with the same company for, wait, hear this, for brand loyalty, 21 years and never had a claim. They just did not care. Please, folks, I've nothing against insurance companies. They are a business, but they have a way of doing business. Mary was 21 years loyal to that company, and they didn't try and keep her, and she moved company, and it's so easy now. It's a piece of cake. It's not like how it used to be, and she saved €200. So that's €200 for Mary Boyce. She can head out now for a beautiful meal and a bottle of wine and head home with change. Greg, where are you getting this notion that people are living longer? I don't see it. I've been at several funerals lately, and most of them were very young. You need to go to the graveyard in Letterkenny and take a look at the ages of the people that passed away in the last year. You'll find they're not old. And I understand how that might feel like that. And I think also, too, particularly when we lose someone tragically and young, when we lose someone tragically and young, you can be more aware of that. But it's quite literally down to the statistics. You know, when you pass away, regardless of what age you are, your death and age is recorded and that's collated, and we are living longer. But I also take on board the point that you're saying it can feel like that too. And I think as you get a little bit older as well, you become more acutely aware of your peers and those younger than you that are passing away. Right, it is time for a quick break, and then we're going to talk about fuel prices ahead of the budget. Now, just to remind you, join Oisin Kelly and the team tonight. They're getting up for the match, of course. Oisin is going to Glenties to continue the build-up to the big game at the weekend, Galway v Donegal. What do you think? How do you think that will go? Let us know. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. 086 60 25,000. A caller says, don't know how that woman went through the M50 toll twice. If she had to use the port tunnel twice, all booths are able to take card to tap. They are able to take card to tap. But it's the phone that you can't tap the phone, and my card doesn't tap. Right, Kevin McPartland is CEO of Fuels for Ireland. Good morning to you, Kevin. Thanks for joining us.
Morning.
Right, you're calling for urgent action on fuel prices before the dole goes on summer recess. So what are you calling for?
Well, on the 1st of August, the final phase of the reinstatement of excise duty is expected. Your listeners will remember that back in the summer of 2022, shortly after the invasion of Ukraine, the then Minister for Finance, Michael McGrath, reduced the excise duty on petrol and diesel because of the very, very high commodity prices that were driving up pump prices. And people will recall, I think I spoke to you at the time even, there were prices of €2.10 to €2.15 even per litre. So the excise duty was reduced to kind of take the sting out of that for people by government, which was a welcome intervention. And over the last couple of years, they've been reinstating that gradually. And the final phase of that is due on August 1st. We're saying that they need to have a really hard look at that because the price of fuel is still high. It's not as it was back then, but it's still high. And that adding 4 cents a litre to the price of petrol and 3 cents a litre to diesel is going to put another burden on people who are already struggling at this point in time. So that's from the consumer side. On a business side, and particularly where I'm speaking to people who live in a border county now, the price differential north and south of the border is really significant already and is going to grow yet further because the British government made a decision not to reinstate the excise duty in the United Kingdom and therefore Northern Ireland. So we have this problem where prices are very high all over the country. People are suffering. Fuel is not something that people make a decision on whether to buy or not based on price because they need it. You don't decide whether to take the kids to school or whether to go to work, or businesses don't decide whether to deliver their product based on the price of diesel or petrol on any given day. People need it. And also then this question of the fuel tourism, which, let's be frank, I'm not criticizing anybody who would make that decision. So I think it's a sensible decision. If you live close to the border and you can get your fuel for 10, 15 cent a litre less by driving a couple of kilometres, people do that. So we think the government needs to take a careful look at this. The other thing that's worth pointing out as well is that the tax take on fuel is already higher than it was expected to be, and that's because the price is still high. So the VAT is added as a percentage of the price. So even without reinstating the excise duty on the 1st of August, the government is making more than it was expecting to make from the sale of fuels in Ireland right now.
Yeah, and you know, when we talk about cross-border, travelling across the border for fuel, and this has happened over years, you would know that, Kevin, when prices are higher or lower in one end or another. But it's businesses now as well too. You know, pretty much every forecourt has a shop, serves food, and you know, you add in changes to sort of solid fuel prices and you know deposits on bottles and differences in food shopping, and then now you add in potential savings for fuel. You know, it's not just petrol pumps that risk you know serious pressure on their businesses in the southern side of the border.
No, the research is very clear on this. If people travel across the border to buy fuel, they then also tend to do their grocery shopping, or alternatively, if they go to do their grocery shopping, they tend to buy fuel. So it's a really significant loss, and that loss is worth spelling that out in case people don't think that through. What that means is that the revenue which goes to the Irish state is lost because people are paying taxes to the government in Westminster. It also means that for those businesses that are close to the border, that puts them at real threat. And you know, I know in Donegal and the surrounding counties, the other border counties, that those fuel retailers are much more than just fuel retailers. They often are the place where the post office is being situated, and people sometimes do their everyday banking at those post offices. It's the place where people might go and drop dry cleaning off in rural areas and those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. So they are much more than just fuel retailers.
The only issue
and
we have, Kevin,
is a threatened.
Yeah, of course. But the only issue we have, and anyone who lives on the border will know this, is that whilst there might be a hole in the economy or damage to a certain amount of businesses, as we've been describing here, unfortunately, that impact doesn't seem significant enough to change policy in Dublin. It's not important enough to, and we've seen that with how we, with lots of different things. I could give a load of examples. In other words, the border problem's always there, but we just plough on anyway, and that is almost taken into consideration, if that makes sense. So, in other words, I'm quite sure the government is aware of everything you're saying, or whoever makes the decision, but it's collateral damage for the wider objectives, and it just always feels like that when you live on the border.
I agree with you, and I think, you know, that is a very well-founded sort of sense of how the government regards border counties. And also there's another element about kind of just rural Ireland, that, you know, people sit in Dublin, and I'm sitting here in my home office, and I live in Eamon Ryan's constituency, and the Lewis is 200 metres away, and there are bus lanes in and out of town, and I can cycle, and I have all those options, which I don't know Donegal as well, so forgive me, but, you know, I think of my family in North Cork. They don't have any of those options. Rural Ireland, people there tend to drive about two and a half times
more. We've no choice. We've no choice.
Yeah, exactly. People drive 2.5 times more miles every year than people in urban Ireland. And yet the policy decisions seem to be based on a very urban-centric approach to transport, but also to the economy. And you're right, there is this view that collateral damage, you know, this is something, well, it's inevitable. And they'll say, well, there are always cycles in cross-border trade. Sometimes they work in our favour. Sometimes they work in the favour of the Westminster government. But in this case, we are baking in a price differential for 12 months.
And also, too, listen, and I don't want to be all poor Ross, like, you know, whether or not cars should be banned from certain parts of Dublin has received far more press in the last month than the challenges facing people living in rural Ireland getting to and from wherever has in the last 10 years.
That's a really good point. Yeah, there's been all of this focus on a conversation about whether cars should be able to cross the city in Dublin, which is, let's be frank, a fairly marginal issue compared to the millions of people living in rural Ireland who don't have the other options, who can't cross the city by Lewis or Dart or by bus, because those things don't exist in rural Ireland. And when you have this conversation with the department, they will say, oh, yeah, but we've increased Rural Link by X percent. You go, increased it from what to what? Like, it's still tiny. You know, you cannot rely on Rural Link to get your shopping done every week, for people to go and collect pensions, for people to do their everyday banking, for people to maintain family life and see their family and friends, you know,
in the next village. Most basically get to and from work. You know, that's just on the most basic level. And some of these buses are in places that effectively they don't even need to run unless they get a call from someone on that route. That's another elephant in the room as well. Like, where are they? Where are they running? And you know, how well thought out is that? Also, too, what I think would be useful at this point, especially with a new Minister for Finance, is to explain to us, I'm sure you're aware, Kevin, but explain to us the makeup of the layers of taxation on fuel, i.e., you know, the carbon tax. Is that to keep us off the road? Well, we can't, because you've outlined already that we need our cars. You know, and maybe they don't want to fiddle with the carbon tax because it's part of a wider suite of actions to try and reduce emissions. I don't know. But there must be some movement in other areas of that tax where they can say, right, okay, we're going to sort of leave it as is now, so there's a bit of certainty for people, you know, because we have to factor all this into our annual cost of living as well. Lorry companies, bus companies, as we've been mentioning, you know what I mean? It's not just, the occasional fill at the fuel tank. This is all pop. This is all baked into our lives here as well, in terms of getting to and from work and what have you.
I couldn't agree more, Greg. And the thing is that we have to recognise that when we're talking about high prices right now, so people may be paying around 175, 176 today for a litre of fuel. €1 of that is going straight to the government, okay? And then we're going to have an increase on 1st of August of this final reinstatement of the excise duty. That's 4 cents per litre on petrol, 3 on diesel. On budget night, we know already that at midnight on the 1st of October, going into 2nd of October, we are going to have an increase of 2 cents per litre for carbon tax. And then we know on the 1st of January that changes to what's called the Renewable Transport Fuel Obligation Scheme are going to add another 2 cents a litre, and they're pre-VAT. So then you're talking about a 9 cent per litre increase in the price of fuel between now and the 1st of January. And I agree with you, there needs to be some really careful consideration of the overall tax take on fuel, because there are three different departments involved in that. One is coming from the Department of Finance, one is coming from the Department of Transport, and one is coming from the Department of Environment, Climate and Communications. I don't believe that there is any joined up thinking there. I don't believe the Cabinet sat around the table and said, do you know what would be a really smart thing to do as we're coming into an election, a general election? Let's put 9 cents onto the price of every litre of fuel sold in Ireland in the next 6 months. I don't believe that happened. And maybe I'm wrong, but I don't believe it. But what government really needs to do is to have a comprehensive review of all fiscal policy that relates to the price of energy.
But do you know what your problem, Kevin, is? Your problem, Kevin, is, and I've suspected this for quite some time.
Only my wife normally begins a sentence like that now, Greg, in fairness.
Rather her than me. But the thing is I believe that in Dublin, in government circles, and maybe in 30 years' time, when the documents are released, we might learn. I believe actually €2 is their ceiling. So I think anything under €2 a litre for diesel and fuel, they'll work with. I don't think they're worried about 176, 185, 165. I think €2 is the ceiling. That's when it edges to that. That's when you might see something. And I believe
my phone leapt off the desk the first time a litre of fuel in Ireland was sold at 2 cents a litre, from media, from, I think I even spoke to you at that time, from politicians, from officials, how can we stop this? And you go, well, you have created a situation where this was inevitable. And look, we don't know what prices are going to do in the future. Hopefully the commodity prices will come down, not least because that would mean that there's a bit more stability on a global conflict level. But hopefully prices will come down. But if all things remain the same, then this constant increase of the price of fuel, and being told that it is in some way designed to move people away from fossil fuel and to alternatives, it's just not true. It doesn't work. Even when we were charging 2.10 and 2.15 a litre, the volumes of sales did not decrease in any significant way whatsoever, because people need it.
Another thing, this is just by the by, but I just want a quick rant on this as well. We, particularly here in the Northwest, is one of the most deprived areas in terms of disposable income. We're also penalised extra because we drive older cars, mm-hmm. which are harder to, they're more expensive in tax and the more expensive on insurance. But even further to that, if you pay for your car tax every 3 or 6 months, and it is to the state, they actually charge you extra, right? That to me is a horrible situation. So if you've an older car, you're paying more every which way. And then to pay the state your car tax for 6 months costs about, 20 or 30 quid more than if you were able to afford it for the year. So whichever way you go, the less money you have, the more you feel like you're being shafted.
And this is why we say there needs to be an urgent review of all tax on, and we're thinking particularly fuel, but I think that's a good point on most tax. Because the reality of this is that we are telling people that we're increasing prices as some sort of environmental measure, even though it is abundantly clear that's not effective. It doesn't work. It doesn't reduce demand. It doesn't reduce consumption.
Because people may not realise this. There is no carbon tax on jet fuel. Mm-hmm. There isn't, is there? There isn't.
No, that's another issue, and it's quite complicated the convention is you don't apply tax to a product that's being exported, and because jet fuel by definition is exported, They don't tax in that way, and they would argue that, and it's not my area of expertise, but they would argue that the charges on airports are designed to counter that.
But can I just make that point in terms of that's not a carbon tax.
No, it's not.
If the motivation is about discouraging us from destroying the planet, but anyway, sorry, I know I'm taking you in different parts outside of the remit of Fuels for Ireland. Last point, sorry, go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, just finish that point, though, about the fallacy of saying that increasing prices is to move people away, because what it means is that the people who are least able to make a change by buying an electric vehicle or by having the deep retrofit done to put a heat pump into their house, those people, the people who can't make those choices are often can't make them for a financial reason. They can't afford a new car. They can't afford to have the deep retrofit. And yet they're the people who are being... on whom higher and higher prices are being foisted every time, and that's not fair. It's not just.
No, and that is exactly those two words, and you used one of them, just transition. People will go and people will make the changes because people are invested in the future, but it has to be just and it has to be achievable. Kevin McPartland, thank you so very much. He's CEO of Fuels Ireland. Good luck to Carndonagh traders today on their festival visit in Carndonagh. I'm not familiar with that. Tell us more about it. Greg, I don't think Irish people trust the court system. When men avoided jail with pornography images, sometimes they have thousands of them. Well, that's exactly what I referenced, you know. John is back with me now, talking about the cost of fuel. Morning, John, what's your view?
Good morning, how are we this morning, Greg?
Good, John, hanging in there.
Good. I always say to the tourists that I meet that the rain's going to get warmer as the week goes on.
That's it, right?
When you're talking about the forecast.
Well, you don't see the tourists step off the plane, off the buses or into buses, and they're wearing all the right clothes, and we're walking around in T-shirts praying for sunny weather. The tourists don't mind.
No, that's true. Well, listen, my point is it's agenda of our government pushing electric cars and pushing us into public transport as the reason on our fuel hikes. And the thing that's so ironic about it, pushes into electric cars, when you go into some of the towns and the cities, the majority, and I mean this by the majority, of the some of the electric charging points, they're run by diesel generators. Very, very economical and very green, if you want to call it, which I think is a diabolical situation. We should be avoiding the green, and we should be praying for Donald Trump to get back in America so we can drill, so we can get our fuel prices down again. That's my
anyway. You're coming from the left field there. You don't sound like an Eamon Ryan fan by the sounds of things, John.
Not at all. Eamon Ryan, between the Green Party and this country, they've done more harm than the English ever done, but seem to be getting away with it. And it's diabolical when you look at the situation that we're in, as far as the rich is getting richer and the poor is getting poorer, but nobody seems to be caring about it, which is, it's kind of getting to the stage now, it's very unfair. But as far as our green situation is, it's we're adopting the ocean, and I think it's diabolical that we have to lead the way as a wee dot in the ocean, that Ireland seems to be trying to lead the way in all this nonsense. And at the end of the day, it's a cycle that the world is going to do, whether we stop all our turf fires. Now, I don't know if you've been keeping an eye on the volcanoes. Sombola there erupted, and the one there are a couple of volcanoes going. Do you know how many turf fires would need to be burning in Ireland to keep up to one day of a volcano going up into the sky?
Four.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So
no, I'm joking.
This is my point.
Yeah, all right.
You know,
okay, I get you.
You know what I mean? I think...
But do we not have to try and do something for our grandchildren and their children, though?
Well, I totally agree. But I'll do that when America and China and all these countries are leading the way. Not us. We're adopting the ocean. We're having no effect. And no effect. And see that the boy that you on last week, they're out of the Green Party. See, when I meet him along the road coming in a horse and cart, and he promises he'll only go on holiday by canoe, then I'll listen to him. But when he's stepping on holidays with these planes and he's driving about in a big 3-litre turbo, like four-wheel drive cars like most of them are, then there's no right for them to come on and tell us how we should be living our green life whenever they're not going by example.
Yeah.
But when I meet him in a horse and cart, then I'll start listening. Because if you're wanting people to lead by example, you know what I mean?
The horse's farts are a problem as well, so you can't be too careful.
Seriously, all joking aside, Greg, when we actually sit down and really think about it, can you imagine...
I've lost you, John. I've lost you. I think your point was well made there, anyway, in terms of your opinion. I don't necessarily agree with John. I think we do have to try and do something down the line, but obviously it has to be fair, and that's the problem at the moment. It doesn't, for a lot of people, feel fair. Right, OK, that was an interesting, busy, vibrant first hour of the show. We're going to be back with another two after we take a break for the news and obituary notices.